Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sex. It's Yay. The Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts,
Salsa.
And Jenna.
And special guest,
Mahmoud Hakima.
Yay!
Yay!
Good job.
As you can tell, James is not here, so this podcast will be all the better.
Are we actually going to end on time? Do we have
Probably.
It on time? Holy shit. Fuck. Yes.
We might actually be able to say everything we want to say.
That's weird.
I've already.
We love you and miss you, James.
Yes, James. I'll try to do you honor by.
Oh, God. Now Mahmoud's just going to distract us and take us down 15 different rabbit holes.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
We have Booze Mahal in front of us. We're doing nothing too terribly fancy tonight. We're doing just simple Johnny Jump Ups. We're using some rye whiskey and some of the Blake's hard cider.
Yeah.
It's good. It's real good. I thought you were going to do the yes.
No, let's also do that.
Oh.
He does it better than I do. Yeah.
Mm.
Like me some Johnny Jump.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
So, Jenna.
I don't think I've seen you on podcast
for a
month.
It's been at least a month since we've seen each other,
because you had a couple weeks and then I had a week.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm glad you still exist, Salsa.
Does he really? Is this just an apparition?
Am I really glad?
Yeah.
That's more what I'm confused
about. Well, I'm glad you're here to push the buttons.
Fair enough. I am a good button pusher.
Oh.
Yep. I push
true
buttons words. All the time.
True words have never been said. Yeah, what have I been up to? Fringe. Fringe.
Fringe.
Ooh. There was more Fringe. I did a bunch of Fringe. I had two shows.
I hope you're going to elaborate, otherwise this is going to be the shortest show ever.
Fringe. More Fringe.
Then there was Fringe.
Yeah, she fringed it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, eat the fucking cake.
God. So I had two shows in the Fringe Festival this year. I had The Bisexual Unicorn and Other Mythological Creatures, which it was a show. So I had a ringleader, Brian Watson Jones. Introducing each different act, but in between telling different stories or anecdotes about being bisexual.
Yeah.
MCing. Yes. And then we started with KJ Archer as a angry clown, because of course you need to have an angry clown. And he did some balloon animal stuff and I should back up. The premise is it's mostly storytelling, but it has some circus acts and some circus tricks involved or stunts or whatever. So KJ Archer was a clown doing a story that involved balloon animals or involved balloon animals as a storytelling device about the expectations of being gay and fat. Mm. You're just there to be the bodyguard or the sugar daddy or things like that.
Right.
And then after that, we had Tom St. talk about being non-binary and doing some sleight of hand, making things disappear, and talking about how, as a non-binary person, you can feel like people are assigning you different gender, shoving aside your gender, ignoring your gender, and the way that you feel like you're disappearing. Then we had J. Harold Zamora did some poi dancing and talked about Two-Spirit and what that is and what that means. And what Two-Spirit is you're a Native person in the LGBT community. That's what it is. It isn't necessarily bi. It isn't necessarily gender fluid or anything like that. It's just a native term for native people who are in the rainbow alphabet. And Jay talked about, what that means specific to their community and what that means specific to to white people, which is don't. basically, look.
Just don't.
No. No, Jason Mraz, you are not two-spirit. Piss off. Mm. Like, oh, yeah, he said that at one point.
I don't know who that is, so.
It's the musician. Anyway, so, yeah, then Kayla Sotabeer did a piece about how identity shifts. And how trying to figure out what and how you identify as can be problematic. And how identity isn't necessarily a stationary thing. And while doing that was balancing things. Specifically, a cup full of Skittles. 'Cause delightful. And each
taste
one of...
rainbow.
And that was a line. Yeah. So, like, each one of those four performers specific had, you know, their own stories to tell. And then after that, Brian got to do his piece about the myths of the bisexual, you know, and expounded on different myths that bisexuals can have put upon them. Like, bisexuals are psychopathic killers. Does that one seem specific? Yeah. When in media, all the time, like, you're not focused on... He talked about one media representation where there was an individual that was basically the main driver for drugs in Miami. And they raped people, and it was just, you know, like, all of this other stuff. Raped, killed, drugs, all of this. And the big headline wasn't force people to have sex with them. It was force men and women to have sex with them. And, House of Cards and Gotham and other shows that, like, the bisexual is just a psychopathic killer. Like, yeah.
Okay.
If you have a bisexual in media, more likely in any kind of I don't want to say, well, anyway, but basically, like, there's a very strong likelihood that they're going to end up being the psychopathic killer.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So that's a trope. Oh, and while he was doing this, he was eating glass. So, you know, which made everybody uncomfortable, and it was delightful. So.
Yeah,
you would have been proud of his glass eating. Because he just took a bite and just crunched it with the mouth open and made sure that, like, Angela and Don were like, oh, God!
Yeah.
It was so delicious. So, yeah. And the very end of that show was talking about how it's good that you have questions, but people in the community aren't required to answer them.
Yep.
And we're done performing for you. And then, like, everybody just dropped their stuff and then the lights went out.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my contribution. That last 30 seconds was basically what I did for that show.
No, that reminds me of the Hannah Gadsby stand-up special, where at the end she's like, I know that I have made you very uncomfortable here, but it is not my job.
Yep.
To make you not uncomfortable.
Right.
So, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. So I did that show. Got some pretty stellar reviews, a few not, because basically the Fringe Review website is the YouTube commentary section.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is. That's why,
yeah.
But there were a lot of nice things that were said. And we got a write-up in Lavender Magazine, which is our local gay magazine. So my gay show got an outstanding review in a gay magazine, and I feel like that's pretty much the epitome of success for that show.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
But then I did another show.
Go on.
I did. Wilhelmina and Theodore's Exquisite Victorian Adventure.
Wilhelmina and Theodore's Exquisite Victorian Adventure?
No, I mean, I know we haven't talked about it 18 million times on this podcast, but...
That's okay. I have a short memory.
I know. For Salsa and those of you tuning in for the first time, and I'm sorry if this is your first, but... Wilhelmina and Theodore's was a Victorian / steampunk take on Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And all of my actors were absolutely phenomenal. I mean, there was this one guy, but, but I'm sorry, Mahmoud, is there?
No, yeah, go on, please.
Oh, okay. also Mahmoud was there.
Yes.
And, so I'll probably let him talk more about that specific, but, we also did get really good reviews for it.
Yeah.
I'm just really proud of that production. It was solid. It was tight. My actors were on, even on the slower nights, like they were still really solid and pushing good stuff out.
And tight.
Tight. Yeah, it was a very tight production.
Yep.
Yeah.
They were solid.
Yep.
And tight.
Yep. Like my vagina.
Yep.
Okay.
Except
God.
The opposite of your vagina.
Hey.
Just saying, you had a few dates like that once.
I did. Anyway.
Well, I mean, also, like your vagina, it also got plenty of rave reviews online.
It did get rave reviews online. Yes. Oh, excellent.
Yes. My two cents on it.
Hooray! Vagina, we need to have a conversation.
Positive review on Angie's List? What?
It's not that hard to get a positive review on Angie's List. What? I know nothing. But yeah, it was a good production. I was so very happy with that production, and now we never need to move that goddamn water closet ever again.
that was a task for sure. Yes.
Do you want to talk about the water closet?
Yeah,
please do.
Yeah.
Salsa doesn't know why we have a water closet.
Okay, so the water closet.
Is it anything like a fart cupboard?
I don't know.
Mildly, actually.
Well, it's a door frame, a pretty heavy door frame with two little, like, old-timey bar, saloon. Yeah.
Oh, saloon doors.
Yeah.
Neat.
I think originally it was going to be on wheels, which would have been easier to move.
Yeah.
But that didn't pan out. So for each performance, pretty much almost the entire cast, you know, bonded together to move this big thing out of our storage space onto the stage, and then at the end of the show to move it off.
Yeah. So
everyone can grab the corner and...
It took six people to move that thing.
Mm-hmm. And then that's what we used to...
It was solid.
Yeah.
It was solid. Mm-hmm.
And the play, that's used as the water closet, which is basically the equivalent of the telephone booth and
it is our time-traveling machine.
Yes. It also flushes.
Yes.
And is bigger on the inside.
Yep.
we have shades of TARDIS in here as well.
Yeah. Well, I made the sound cues for the show, and I knew I needed something transitional, you know, something for in between the scenes. And I'm like, well, what's happening in between the scenes? Well, they're moving through time.
Mm-hmm.
For almost all of it, the scene shifts are moving through time. So I made a 10-second audio clip that started with a flush and then had some gear noises and then had a clock noise. And then at about 6.5-7 seconds, you got a little bit of a TARDIS. And then there was a grandfather clock noise, the dong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the sound of the toilet gurgling out. And steam, like when a train comes into a station, just that shh.
Yes. Okay, all of this scans.
I was really proud of that. I spent like 3 hours on that goddamn sound cue.
10 seconds.
It's very impressive. Oh, very impressive.
Oh, fuck.
You're not going to hear a sound like that anywhere else, I think.
I don't know.
Pretty unique.
This is the thing I love about creating things, is that for 10 seconds... of something that's on stage, it takes that much effort and time to go into it. Nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that.
That's just a labor of love.
I will say, yeah. We had 10 scenes. Almost all of them used that as the transition. So it was over a minute's worth of use out of that thing. And that's just for the scene transitions. We also used that once in the middle of a scene. And then I used an abbreviated version of it a couple of times throughout scenes for, like, there's the time machine has arrived off in the distance, like off stage kind of a thing. And then I used another version for when the machine broke and another version for when it got fixed. So, I mean, that 10-second clip did get a lot of use.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons why I felt I need to put as much so effort into it. If we're going to be listening to that for roughly 2 minutes of the show.
If it's cringeworthy, then by the middle of the show when it starts, people are like, here it comes
exactly.
again.
That process reminds me of last year when we did the horror festival. We did the Headless Horseman. The laugh of the Headless Horseman was basically like a combination of all like different actors laughing. So it was all like, kind of spliced together. And, different levels and, you know, different, what do you call it? Like highs and lows were all just mixed together. Which turned into a very unique and really
Was it Duck that did the audio on that, though?
That was Tim, I believe.
Really?
I think so.
Okay.
But Duck directed it, of course. But.
Yeah. I just know Duck does a lot of audio, and I was like, oh, maybe he does. So. Cool.
Very cool.
And by the way, I didn't know if you know you were gonna like, because I've listened to other podcasts in the past, and I didn't know if you were gonna like formally introduce me and then.
We're not professional. No.
So I can talk at any time.
Yeah, you can talk at any time. Okay.
This is a free call.
Interrupt.
All right. Whew.
In fact, please interrupt consistently and regularly because James isn't here.
Oh,
and we need to feel at home.
Oh my gosh, I've been slacking off, James. Sorry.
So, what is who are you in this show? Because we haven't actually said that.
Yeah, so I play Rufus, and I. For those of you who don't know, Rufus is the character played by. George Carlin. Yes.
Yeah.
And
I
did my research
Carl?
Too.
What?
Carl George. Shit. Jonathan. And I also play Ramses the Second. I thought this was really, really cool in the script. Instead of going to, I don't know, getting Abraham Lincoln or, you know, they go to Egypt and they find Ramses the Second. And, you know, what a great opportunity to, you know, play a historical character who is powerful, but also at the same time very flawed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think in the Victorian era, George Washington would not be nearly as historical.
Right. Well, we had Ada Lovelace,
mm-hmm.
who is not too far back in history. And then we also had Descartes,
mm-hmm.
And we had Anne Bonny. So we've basically got...
Did you have Day Horse?
That joke was used three times. Three times. And in fact, So one of the reviews for our show...
Oh, was that one of the puns?
That mm-hmm. had to be one mm-hmm. of the puns, because there were a couple of the puns that had incredible setup.
Okay.
And...
We read the reviews last week.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Mm. Oh, God.
We read the two-pun review.
The two-pun review is my favorite review. I have, in the past decade, at least, of doing Fringe, I've had two reviews stand out for me. One is when somebody said, and this was back when we were on the Kitty system.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to Stars.
Mm-hmm.
They said they absolutely hated my show, but they could tell I was really trying. So they gave me a kitty. And
so sweet.
I know. I got a pity kitty. And that pleased me because the rhyming and the sound of a pity kitty. Aw. Yes. But Tupan might be replacing that as my favorite review because there were way more than two puns in that show.
I don't know what show that reviewer was watching.
But, right. Like, yeah. As an aside, the show was written by Duck Washington, Megan Slauson, and Eric Thompson.
Eric Thompson. Where's the French?
Eric Thompson is French on this podcast.
Oh,
for reasons.
For reasons. Okay. I don't remember how or why.
I
But Eric Thompson. Anyway, so yeah, the three of them wrote it, and I think they did a phenomenal job with script. They did everything as Fringe writers. I couldn't have had a better group of people for Fringe writing, because they did. Not only was the script real tight, but they made sure to write in time for costume changes.
Yeah.
They wrote in very limited scenery, because you did Fringe. You've got 10 minutes to set up and 10 minutes to tear down.
Mm-hmm.
They did their research. They did so much historical research on this and found out so many fun things and put that in the script. It was incredible.
It was educational.
Did you know they chewed gum in the Victorian age?
Neat.
Right? Did you know Ada Lovelace was a huge fan of horse racing and gambling on horses?
I did know that.
Yeah? That was in our show.
Nice.
Fuck yes, she was.
Oh, fuck yeah, she was.
Also, yeah, she...
Yeah. Well, Ada Lovelace was played by Becky Schmidt.
Okay.
Previous guest. TM Becky Schmidt. What? So Ada Lovelace, as she was written in the show, we come across her in a at the races, at the horse races, shouting and cursing and yelling at these things.
Mm-hmm.
So Becky Schmidt got to play Becky Schmidt back in time. That's basically what that was.
And I like Becky's bio, where she's like, you know, she's honored to be the reason why this particular show is not for kids only.
It was the adult language content warning. Yep, because we did say the show was for ages 12 and up, and we had some kids. And I talked to them afterwards for just a minute, even though I'm not supposed to, but. Well, because we're trying to load out, so the texts are always like, don't stop and talk to the audience. And I'm like, I'm talking to these kids. Oh, I'm sorry, Jenna, Andy, this is rebel. Happening.
Yes.
I know. And they were like, oh, my God. It was really funny that the gears didn't do anything.
Just put some gears on it.
Yep. You know what? One of my favorite lines in the show, which I thought would get a bigger reaction, was, you know, when Ada Lovelace says, you know, why have these gears if they don't do anything? And then Wilhelmina says, we don't know. And just that in her face and that, you know, that...
She's so delightful in that.
I mean, in rehearsal, I laughed so hard every time when she said that.
Yeah.
I don't know why that didn't get a big...
Yeah, so our time-traveling water closet was a steampunk time-traveling water closet.
I like it.
So it had gears all over it and ran off of steam.
It's a punk thing.
It's a punk thing.
Yes.
But why a water closet?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the show. I mean,
it was so much fun.
The whole process and just how Jenna, and the show was stage managed by Jada Bule. Yeah.
I should really know that. I've been friends with her for years.
I just know her by her first name.
Yeah, it's Jada.
Yeah, but
Jada B.
Jada B, yeah, but Jada and Jenna just... I don't know, had a great laid-back, relaxed environment, which made it fun. And we, you know, basically for almost every rehearsal, we were, like, cracking each other up during, you know, during rehearsing. Whether lines or just, you know, and it was just such a fun experience to be a part of.
I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm part of a production that is enjoyable to be a part of, It's so nice.
Well, and I mean, here's the thing, from a director's perspective, and this is taking the Jenna friend element out of it completely. Mm-hmm. From a director's perspective, I don't care if you're having a good time. What I care about is the end result, right? Mm-hmm. I have discovered through my own experience and other people's that, hey, you get a really good result if your cast actually wants to be there.
Ta-da!
Now, adding the Jenna element back into that, I love it when people have a good time. And I love being a part of a good time. Yeah. But just looking at it from a pure, like, utilitarian standpoint, I want people to have a good time working for me.
Because they work harder for you.
Well, because they work harder for me. Also, I can't pay that much.
Yeah.
I am not paying people what they're worth because I can't.
Nope.
Otherwise, it would be $1 million checks all around.
Yes. Speaking of. No.
Oh, God. Oh, shit.
I'm going to write some more zeros on the end of my check.
I'm going to hide my face here.
Mahmood is going to be sending you a bill.
Well, yes. I mean, it was produced by Fearless Comedy Productions.
Oh, all right. You know, I got $1 million talent, you know. So.
I know you have $1 million talent. Shit. That doesn't mean I'm paying you $1 million. Neither is Fearless.
Mm.
No.
I'll say, too, though, on the... So not only was it fun, but also, obviously, you know, there has to be a balance. You have mm-hmm. to, because you can't have too much fun, you know.
You have to stay focused.
Really, yeah, reel it in at times. And I think Jenna also did a great job of, you know, let's focus at this particular time.
I swear I didn't invite him on just to gush about me. I swear that was not a part of my plan.
Blushing. Yes, I can.
But, I mean, keep going, because, you know, as long as you're here.
Mm-hmm. And a great way of getting people to, you know, pushing people to where you want them.
To where I needed them to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It did not feel like work at all. I felt like play, but also, well, it felt like serious play as well.
Serious play. Yeah. I like that. I like that. I will take serious play.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Well, and I had, for actors, I had 3 people that I'd worked with before. Although, have I ever actually worked with you in a production proper?
Negative.
Okay. And I don't think I've worked with Becky in a production proper. I have directed Tim once before,
mm-hmm.
Which was, oh, God. See, here's the thing. I have a director crush on Tim Uren, because I just think he's stellar. He goes into a thing, not only as a performer, but also as a director, because I think the first time I worked with Tim... he asked me to come in and do some violence choreography for him, for one of his horror shows. And the best compliment I've ever gotten on my violence choreography came from Tim Uren, when he said, "Jenna has choreographed something that has squigged me out of my own show."
That's what?
Squigged me out of my own show.
Neat.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And all I did was exactly what he wanted me to do, so, you know. So he gave good notes and just kind of let me do my thing, and then I did my thing, and he was very happy with it. but no, I've worked with him before. I've directed him before for Fearless Five a couple years back. And what I love about working with Tim specific is... you just say go, and then he does it. Hmm. And then you give him like a rough idea of what you're looking for, and he just fills it out so beautifully.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm Descartes. Like, he was already like, oh, I'm Descartes. I have a French accent. I'm doing this. And like, and just like, was so good, I didn't even need to focus on him most of the time. Mahmood was all right, too.
yeah, you know.
Mm.
You know.
Well, I think one of the fun aspects about working with Mahmood was because we hadn't worked together before.
Right.
On a production specific. But I've known you for like 10, 12 years, something mm-hmm. like that. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, this is just how I work with Mahmood. Like, I didn't have to learn how to work with you. I was just like, oh, I tell Mahmood this and then this happens. Like,
yeah.
It's just that. Here's where I let Mahmood play. And there are 2 things about your casting specific that I loved. Number one, when I told people that you were cast in the show, people were like, oh, is he going to play Rufus?
Oh, like, really?
Everybody was just like, if I was going to cast Mahmood in this, it would be Rufus. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, I'm going to cast him as Rufus. Are you kidding me? Number one, like everybody was just like, yeah, Mahmood needs to be Rufus, obviously. Mahmood needs to be the person that gets to break the fourth wall and talk directly to the audience and all of that. But the other thing that I loved about you are one of the few people that in a scripted work, I feel comfortable allowing you to go off book with audience.
Yeah.
I think it was...
Which you did a couple times.
Which you did a couple times. I think my favorite one was opening night. Mahmood was playing Ramses, and he basically hits on and then dismisses Wilhelmina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience turned on him. They were like, oh. And he goes, oh, shut up. And it was so beautifully timed and so perfect. And Mahmood knows when he can get away with it and when he shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, that was, it was so delightful.
I broke Wilhelmina and Theodore. I think I kind of broke myself too.
Right. Well. But,
yeah.
In this very serious play that we were performing, Mahmood,
you can't do that. You can't laugh in this.
Yeah, no.
It's all
drama. Dare you.
I did have people, like audience members come up to me afterwards. I liked it when he told us to shut up. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome. I guess.
Mm-hmm. It takes a very special kind of performer to be able to scold the audience and they thank you for it later.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was. It was absolutely perfect. He told them to shut up and they all just started laughing. They were like, ha ha. So, yeah. Becky obviously played an incredible Ada Lovelace, swearing all over the place and being super feminist. It was great. She got the audience to chant pants.
Yeah.
Pants. It was super good. And then I had three people that I hadn't worked with before. A few younger people. Both of my leads, actually. Mm-hmm. My titular characters. I just really like saying titular.
Don't we all?
I'm a 12-year-old. Okay.
I don't get it.
I'm sure you don't, Salsa. Aww. It was, I thought it was going to be weird working with younger people. It wasn't. These three were all just so fucking pro. Like, I just hired the best possible three younger, and one of them was 18. One of them was younger than my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that weirded me out for, like, the first 2 days. And they were fantastic. The chemistry between Wilhelmina and Theodore was incredible.
Dynamite.
Yeah. So I've always said that being a director, 90% of the job is casting.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I fucking nailed that, because I just let my actors basically do their thing and just kind of reined them in bits and places, or pushed them out bits and places. But I never had to have a full overhaul with anybody, you know?
Cool.
Mm.
And it was pretty much day one. We actually started with promo pictures, and the two of them just like, all right, you are now thrust into having chemistry, do this. And then they did it. It was great.
Awesome.
So, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I wish, you know, if, you know, like, just looking back, this is something obviously that, you know, we as actors and directors and can't control, but I do wish that more people could have seen the show.
I do too.
Because we had...
That's the eternal tragedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Although, it really seemed like Fringe numbers were down this year.
Oh, really?
Like, across the board. Mm. There was only one sellout show at Theater in the Round.
Wow.
Really?
Right. Xena
Gabriel. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so they were the only show to have a sellout.
Wow.
That was it.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's usually you get several at Theater in the Round. Number one, because awesome productions are there. It's an easy theater to hit along the way to something else.
Right, it's very central.
And it's a 200-seat theater, 200-plus, so... Like, a sellout there is pretty impressive, but it never feels like it's that many people. You know, you still get that more intimate kind of feel, which is one of the things I absolutely love about it.
Yeah.
I'm a part of a Facebook group for Fringe fanatics. And I was like, so a lot of us artists are like, hey, it seemed like numbers were down this year. Did you guys have... And yeah, like pretty much every single one of them was like, yeah, I just wasn't out there as much this year. So,
very interesting.
So, taking that into account, I think our numbers were pretty good.
Yeah.
Relatively.
Relatively, yeah. But I wanted more people.
Well, but I mean, again, it's one of those, like, when you have something that you're really proud of, like, even if you sell out every night, you're like, I wish more people could have seen it.
Well,
like,
yeah, that's why we've done 3 runs of Caucasian Aggressive Pandas.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly.
But, yeah, and even, yeah, like, when we did Pandas in Theater in the Round 2 years ago, it was not quite, but real close to sell out several of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilhelmina and Theodore was, like, half that. And it was pretty much the same kind of vibe, I guess. It was a Fearless production, so it had the same production name behind it. Same director. what?
It's like a theme.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, it was not. It was really weird.
Do you think ticket prices had anything to do with it?
Some.
Did they go up?
Well, what's funny is that it went back up to what the ticket prices were 3 years ago.
Oh.
Like, it was $14 before they had the wristbands.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $14 after the wristbands.
And so, there's no Ultra Pass, right? Is that...
You could get, like, 5 and 10...
Okay.
10 show swipey passes.
Okay.
And there was a discount in that. I think it was, like, basically came to $10 a show or something. So that's...
Mm.
But when the wristbands were like $16 or $22 and you could see up to 4 shows on one of those, you know, the average ticket price is way lower across the board. The problem is that artist payout was negligible. Mm. Like, it dropped significantly.
Right.
Gotcha.
So I think, and that's always the issue for Fringe that I'm glad I don't have to tackle is, where do you find that balance, right? How do you encourage more mm-hmm. audience but still be able to have solid artist payout?
Yeah. And this is my first time doing Fringe in, I don't know, maybe 5 years. Like, so much has changed.
Not an easy answer.
Yeah.
So, and I do feel like Fringe numbers have dropped in the more recent years, and I'm not... Like, even during the wristband stuff, like, I feel like it dropped a little bit. One person brought up we've gotten a lot less press overall.
Interesting.
And that's like Pioneer Press used to just do a giant spread. City Pages used to have a big thing. Star Tribune wasn't that great, but they still had some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like those three really didn't have a lot this year.
Is that
year.
Because Fringe as an organization wasn't on the ball as far as marketing, or is it because the newspapers all just kind of decided not to do it?
Over the past couple of years, they really haven't been doing it as much.
Did City Pages do anything?
Decreasing.
Because that seems like City Pages' bread and butter.
Right? Yeah. You would think, but I don't... City Pages did, like, a couple of articles about several different shows, but they didn't do any, like, specific review things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, there's, and even some of the fans were saying, yeah, like, I used to just look everything up in Pioneer Press and see what they recommended or what, you know, what they had seen and all of this, and there's just nothing there anymore.
Hmm.
So, I also think that, I don't remember if Fringe staff didn't have a marketing person this year. Which could have been a huge contributing factor.
If they didn't,
I didn't remember them announcing a marketing person, and that might have been a portion of the issue too.
Because their whole staff basically went like an overhaul, right? Like,
yeah, they
replaced everyone.
Almost everybody is newer.
Okay.
Amber will be there until her dying day, as far as I can tell.
Amber.
But, Amber Bathke.
Okay, I don't think I've met her.
Oh, she's the artist liaison.
Okay.
And has been since I think I started, honestly.
Yeah.
Since the Earth cooled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was back. My last one was back in the day with like Robin Gillette and.
Yeah, but Amber was still working under Robin too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, Amber has been there for forever. I don't remember a time when Amber wasn't on staff. Although I also didn't pay that much attention my first couple of years, so who's to say what?
That's fair.
But, yeah. Anyway, You were in another show.
Yeah, I was, which I thought was a Fearless production, but it's not. Wasn't.
It's not a Fearless production. It's but, just chock full of fearless people.
Yeah.
We kind of do that.
it was called Swan Song. It's it was a version of a Agatha Christie story. Basically, in this version, several actors meet at a mansion, and they're here to read through a play that the director, who's not there, has invited them all to come read through. And one by one, they start getting picked off. They start getting murdered. And so it's a
dun dun dun.
Yeah. So it's a whodunit.
Yeah.
Until the very end. It was directed by Jason Kruger, written and produced by Kara White. Both are Fearless members. It was.
I think almost every actor in that was Fearless too.
Jake and
was there. There was. Who played the Southern prima donna?
Gina.
Yeah, she's not Fearless.
Okay.
Yet.
Yet.
Slowly.
Is there another? Yeah. No. Everybody else was Fearless.
Oh, yeah. Bree.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bree's Fearless.
Mm-hmm.
So there was Bree, Allison, Jake, mm-hmm. you, Tim, mm-hmm. and Gina.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss someone?
No, that's everyone.
Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. You said Allison, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
I said Allison.
and this is not a spoiler at all, because I don't know.
Because the production's done.
Yes, but Allison was the murderer.
Yes. I know.
How dare she?
Oh. And I ended up. Bree's character ends up shooting me, so I die a very painful death in the show.
But it was, it was more accidental than anything, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But still, I mean, it still hurt.
Right. And Bree
regardless of your motivation, I'm still dead.
Bree played adorable to the 11th degree. I know, right?
No.
Oh my god. She was super adorable and super just you're like, oh, you're far too adorable. You're definitely the murderer. Nope.
Mm. Yeah. It was interesting because I was like, on one hand you got Wilhelmina and Theodore's, lighthearted comedy, and the other end, everyone dies. Everyone tells a tragic story.
Hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. Funny.
Should we take a break, or?
I mean, yeah, you're the one on top of time, so.
Yeah. Let's take a break, and then we'll talk about something else.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll talk about Mahmood. Maybe we'll find out what Salsa's been up to. I don't know.
Oh yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Right. But are we gonna close the book on Fringe then, or do we have anything else to say about that?
Well,
I mean, I could talk about 18 million shows that I saw, but
yeah,
y'all aren't gonna get to see them, so
yeah, exactly. And I don't know. Looking forward to next year. I think I'll put something in for next year.
Here's the thing. Tim Wick wrote a show called Lunch Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 25-30 year reunion, whatever, to Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
I expected a comedy. Mm. It was not a comedy.
Oh?
No.
No.
Because a bunch of people in that are very funny people.
Yeah. Mm. It was not a comedy. Huh. There were comedic moments, but it tackled a couple of real serious issues. And I was talking to Tim about it. He's like, yeah, I was like all set to do this. Oh, rewatching it? It's not actually a comedy.
No, it's... Yeah.
It's a journey, but it's not mm-hmm. a comedy. And then like they addressed the basically the assault scene that happened in Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Like they addressed that in the Lunch Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some trans stuff, some abuse stuff, basic assumption things all over the place, like pro-life stuff, like mm-hmm. it was that there were a lot of things and I think it was very solid. I just didn't know, was not expecting that when I walked into a Tim Wick written show. So
it's interesting looking at that scene, that specific scene, through a different lens.
Which specific
the scene? The assault scene.
Oh, the assault scene. Yeah,
because I remember I watched Breakfast Club as a kid, as many people they have done.
Right.
But watching that scene then is like, oh, that's hilarious. That's funny. Like, oh, you know. And then as an adult, and now in this, you know, time of more, you know, awareness, like, oh, yeah, that's totally not a cool thing to do.
That's not okay. Yeah.
But you can say that about so many of those 80s movies.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, and that's why for Wilhelmina and Theodore, I was like, the one thing that is not happening is we are not having trophy princesses.
Yeah.
That's not a thing that's happening in my show at all.
There's a great line. There's a great moment in that when Rufus brings Anne Bonny back, you know, to the future, to Wilhelmina and Theodore, so that she can hang out with them. That's what he says.
Let me interrupt for just a second.
Yeah.
The writers discovered Anne Bonny, so she was imprisoned, and then she just mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like, that's an actual thing that happened in history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where did she mysteriously disappear to? Ta-da! My writers are brilliant.
I like it.
So anyway, you didn't realize that? You delivered that line, and you had no idea that's what that was actually referencing? That's delightful.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, let's do it again so I can...
okay.
It'll change my whole... But, Theodore is under the impression that Rufus brought Anne there so that, you know, so he can hook up with her. And so he's, like, walking up to her, being all sleazy, you know, slicking his hair back. Way to go, Rufus. And then she pulls out her sword and says, nope, I'm no man's prize. And... That got some good responses from
the audience. You could tell who was responding because that was a good line, and you could tell who was responding because they had seen the movie and was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, plus she already had a kid with Calico Jack, but that's beside the point.
Exactly. Yes.
All right.
Yes, I know my pirate history.
Yeah.
All right. Now, should we take a break?
Just one more thing.
Okay. Oh.
I'm kidding.
No, you said it. Now you have to follow through.
Flush.
We'll be back right after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
Mm. And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Mahmoud.
Hooray!
Hooray.
He picked up on it. He's a winner.
Some people don't get it that quickly.
I'm a professional.
All right, well, we've already talked to Mahmoud a bit in the first segment about Fringe and stuff like that, but let's talk about not Fringe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit, like first off, you're one of the newer members of Fearless.
Yes, that's right.
How did you get involved in that?
Before I answer, I should mention that during the break, I somehow got a case of the hiccups, so I'm gonna be
awesome
spazzing.
Let's where's your glass?
Oh, right. Well, here actually. But I could use more booze if you got some. One. Yeah, yeah. actually, I think beer would be great. Awesome.
All right.
So as I'm getting a beer, I will answer the question. So, I know Eric Thompson for quite some time, I believe, and Duck Washington even longer. Duck and I actually both worked at Climb Theater many, many years ago.
Oh, sure.
Not at the same time, but
okay.
Thank you very much. Eric Thompson, just in the last last couple years or so, has randomly invited me to do double blind improv, and I've always have said yes and thank you. And he's brought up the idea for me to join Fearless, you know, a few times.
Right.
And first I was like, well, you know, I so, sounds like it might be a big commitment. But then after I did the Fearless horror festival show, Sleepy Hollow. Both Eric and also Duck talked to me about it again. I was like, you know what? I'll just do it. And
you know, I also encouraged you to join Fearless.
Oh yes, that's right. That's right. It was a group effort.
Wow.
What gets me? I'm sidetracking for just a second.
No, go ahead.
What gets me is that, like, I will talk to somebody about joining Fearless, and then later Eric will talk to somebody about joining Fearless, and then they join Fearless, like, every single time. So I feel like I'm the one that hits the volleyball over to the person to spike it across. Yeah.
Well, you know, everyone's got their own part, you know. So you did yours, and Duck did his, and Eric did his, and here I am.
All right.
So
it's a bunch of people who don't take no for an answer.
That's true.
Right.
No doesn't mean no in this case, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
But in this case.
In this case.
Yeah. In this case.
Yeah. Like, I accept no as an answer. Maybe that's my problem. Like, hey, join Fearless. No. Oh.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
I respect your boundaries. I will stop there.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway. I've had that conversation a few times with Eric. I'm like, I help you.
You butter them all up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, as far as like my backstory, like I moved in here in 2001 for acting. That's when I started working with Climb Theater, and I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that Minneapolis had so many theaters and there's so many acting opportunities here.
Hold on.
Yeah.
You came here for acting.
Yes.
And you didn't realize that Minneapolis was a big acting scene.
Correct. Yeah. I didn't know that because, you know, the amount of theaters is like second to New York City. So I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I just thought I was coming to do like a 1 year gig with Climb Theater.
Oh, okay.
Climb Theater is a touring children's theater company.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. Okay. So I got hired, and that's why I came here.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It was just like, I feel like I really want to be an actor, so I'm going to move to Yuma.
What?
Okay?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
No offense to anyone in Yuma if they have a good theater scene there. I actually don't know. I'm just picked up. Going on.
Yes.
No, I think, and I was with Climb for 4 years.
Okay.
And as I became more familiar with the city, then I learned about the theater, I learned about the improv, and that's what kind of has just kept me here. I moved in November 2001. Actually, I auditioned for Climb a day before 9/11.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was in an airport in Charlotte, North Carolina, the day before. I mean, I auditioned, and then I went.
Oh, God.
I was set to leave on 9/11, and then, well. Yes.
And you didn't.
No, I didn't. I stayed for, actually had to stay for about 3 days.
Right.
But luckily the year before, there was a company that I worked with in North Carolina, in Hickory. So I called them and the director, you know, came down and picked me up and I was able to stay with them for a few days.
Okay.
That's helpful.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah.
Wow.
I moved to Minnesota the same year as 9/11.
Wow.
And just never left. Wow, that's...
You left for a little bit.
I was just so scared of flying after that. No.
I can't leave.
No.
You left for a little bit.
I did. A couple years ago, I moved to New York City.
New York City?
Yes, New York City.
Okay.
And then came back to Minnesota?
I did. But, you know, New York City is a great... It's an awesome city. It's an awesome place to visit, but not to live.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that speaks volumes to the Minnesota theater scene. I would say.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Minneapolis and St. Paul actors and improvisers. You make my day. You made me come back.
I forced him to. You will come back.
Between not being able to get... So, he can't get on an airplane, so he can't fly out of the state, and he can't drive out because the roads are all covered in ice, so he's just stuck here.
He's just stuck here.
Yeah, you know, might as well make the best of it.
Minnesota, come for the weather. Stay
because you're... Stay because of the weather.
Yes. Stay because of the weather. God. Come for the theater scene. Stay because your car won't move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And your battery died.
Your battery died. Oh, God. So you've... Where have you done acting in the Minneapolis? Mm-hmm. You've done Climb. You're a member of Fearless.
Yeah.
You've talked about improv. I assume you've done some huge stuff. I actually know that you've done some huge stuff. But, you know, whatever. I was following that alluding comment.
Right, right.
Like I don't know things except that I. Anyway.
Well, I mean, I've done obviously Fringe Festival. I've been a big part of many years.
Right.
And then just, you know, wherever little acting things that I can get with theaters. I mean, if it fits with my work schedule. Then there's a different type of acting which I don't think is discussed a lot. There's companies that hire actors for specific, you know, role play scenarios.
Right.
Like okay, so training the Crisis Company is one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know them, but they hire actors to do role play scenarios with police officers. Mm. So in different training scenarios.
Okay.
Where you know, they're trying to get the officer to actually, you know, treat this person who's having some type of issue, which they might need to be arrested for, whatever.
Right.
To treat them like an actual person, you know, and not have that, hey, you, what are you doing? Put down, you know, stop being loud or whatever, you know, have that,
right,
you know, that tough demeanor.
Human interaction to get to the root of the problem. And
yeah. That was like, I mean, of all the acting that I've done, that's probably like the most realistic and the most rewarding.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because you're given these different scenarios to play. And sometimes these characters you're playing have, like, really, really, you know, really serious issues. And they train you to try to...
Can we clarify serious issues? Like,
okay, yeah.
Drug addict or...
Drug addict or suicidal.
Okay.
Or just, like, a guy who's just, like... The guy is really, really angry. There's one scenario where the guy is just, like, really, really angry because his boss just fired him. And so he's, like, outside his boss's home with a gun and he wants to, you know... He's banging on the door to...
Oh, God.
You know, so the officer's job is to assess the situation.
De-escalate
it. Yep.
Okay.
And not just, you know, pull out the gun and...
And, yeah.
Yeah, or tase him or whatever it is.
Are you ever afraid somebody's going to tase you during one of these?
Oh, my gosh.
I assume that's not an option for the police officer during the role-playing, but...
There's a facilitator whose job is to make sure that doesn't happen.
Okay.
But I'll tell you one time. So... Plan a scenario.
Go on.
Yeah. Plan a scenario where at a gas station, and my character's goal was to basically get the officer to give me money so I can buy drugs. And I had this like little bottle of water, which is supposed to be like gasoline. So basically, and I had like matches in my pocket, you know, threatening to set the place on fire if I didn't get what I wanted. And this one officer. She was, so my job is basically to say whatever, I mean, I basically could say whatever I wanted, and, you know, my goal is to basically try to get under her skin. So I was, you know, I was making, comments I wouldn't normally say to
right.
people, and,
you
know.
You were acting.
I was acting, yeah. I was uh-huh. acting.
Continue.
Yeah, and, she wasn't, and I have, so they trained you to also, like, give the officers, like, clues to make sure that, you know, hints to say that, okay, you're doing the right thing, you're doing the wrong thing. It's called a sting or a reward. So basically,
sure.
If an officer comes up and says, hey, you need to stop, then so I would say, well, why are you telling me what to do? I don't even know your name. Hint?
Right,
hey,
okay, yeah.
Introduce hey, you. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I was like trying to give her all the rewards, or sorry, I was trying to sting her because she was just not doing anything correct. And it didn't work. And at one point, I could tell she was just like getting like really frustrated and really like gritting her teeth and stuff. Mm-hmm. At one point, I happened to like just reach for the bottle that I had on the ground. And all of a sudden she kicked it over and she started like coming towards me. And the facilitator said, stop. So the facilitator paused it right there. Cause I think she was, I mean, I feel like she was going to like jump me if I'm,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I was actually going to ask about that. You said it was very rewarding, but I have to believe that role playing somebody who the police would be like interested in with real police has got to be a little nerve wracking.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
I have a question.
Yes,
I'm going to out you on the podcast in case nobody could tell. Mahmood is black.
Mm-hmm. No.
What?
Really?
I know. Yeah. But my question is, do you feel like that was ever something that was taken into account during the role play things. Like, we've got all the societal stuff about, mm-hmm. you know, Black Lives Matter and things like that. Is that ever, like, a pressure that you felt during these role plays, or was it?
No, because the thing about this these classes was that it was not a class that they were forced to take. They came here to get better.
Okay, cool.
So that, you know, all right, that awesome. Added to it.
So they're already nice. Coming in with open eyes.
Yeah, but they had been trained, you know, their previous training was to say, you know, when you walk into a scenario, get this, like, tough exterior and talk really loud and,
right.
you know, try not, and show no emotion.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't do shit.
No. It's almost like people rebel against that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I know, right? Mm. Just ask my kids.
I don't need to. They've already told me multiple times. Also. Your children are not quiet or shy about these things.
Yeah. And this was also, before the Black Lives Movement started.
Okay.
But just going through that training, I mean, I think I agree that I think there are plenty of good cops for all the bad ones.
Right.
And so obviously it's an ongoing problem to just get rid of all the bad ones.
Right.
Once you get rid of all the bad ones, all the good ones are there and they actually care about the people right. they're serving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that just seems terrifying to me. Like, because clearly you're trying to make it as real as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, again, it's a police officer and you're trying to make it real and you're trying to push their buttons. And it's just like, I don't know if I could do that. Mm-hmm. That seems real scary.
Yeah, the things that I said sometimes.
Man. Oh, my.
I would not say those ever to any police officer.
I've said some shit to police officers, but it was okay. I was acting.
Yeah. Did you swear at them? Did you call them motherfuckers?
I called them all kinds of things. This one guy, I said, you know, I asked him to pull down his pants and show me his thong.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. Oh, my God.
Disclaimer, do not ever say that to a police officer ever.
No, yes. This is not advice we're giving to people.
Unless you're in a very specific role play situation.
Right. Like,
unless that is your actual job, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Or that's your bedroom kink.
I mean, but with somebody that's already consenting to that specific role play scenario. God. Disclaimer.
So clearly you've done very serious stuff, and you said that was very rewarding too, but you've also done a lot of comedy. Which do you kind of gravitate towards? Do you like one style more than another? Do you, or you just kind of come what may?
I find myself getting into different moods. Like, okay, now I'm in the mood to do a comedy, or now I'm in the mood to do a drama.
Right.
And I honestly, I think, I mean, I don't see myself as spoiler alert. I don't see myself as a super funny person. I know that on stage I make people laugh, but I tend to gravitate. I say if there was like a, I say it's like probably like 60-40. So drama and then comedy.
All right. I mean, you are a funny person.
Thank you.
Or I wouldn't have hired you to be in my comedy.
Right.
But yeah.
Yes.
I understand the feeling. I feel like we've talked about these kinds of things before, some kind of like imposter something or other.
And what?
Imposter something or other. Imposter syndrome.
What is that?
You don't know about imposter? Oh, God.
No.
Salsa, go. Imposter syndrome is the sense, is the feeling that you do not belong where you're at. You do not deserve the accolades that you're getting, whether that be at work, whether that be in theater, whether you're just like, I certainly get this every single time I've ever been cast in a role in a play ever. I look around at the rest of the cast and go, everybody else is really talented. What the fuck am I doing here? I don't deserve to be here. Or, you know, I get a raise at work and you're just like, I don't do shit. Why are they giving me more money? That's imposter syndrome, that where you feel like you don't deserve what you're getting when everybody else around you is going, dude, you're fucking amazing. What are you talking about?
Yep.
And that is like the, prerequisite for being an actor or performer in any way, shape, or form, it seems.
Yeah, like 90% of the performers I've talked to have like some level of just like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. They keep casting me. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, I with me too. I think it's I always like do my best to try not to appear
cocky?
Yeah, cocky. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I did make that joke earlier about the $1 million talent, but you know that's
right. Well, I mean, that's not a joke. You are worth $1 million.
Well, thank you.
I just don't have it.
Right.
So you try to stay humble though?
Yeah. My father once gave me some good advice. He said, you know, no matter how big you get, you can have a big career or a big big bank account, whatever, but don't ever get a big head. If you get a big head, then
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't work for me, but, you know.
Yeah.
All of you little people, I'm sure, need that.
Have you ever done anything like voice acting or anything? Oh.
Yeah. Nothing big. Like, a few, like, side projects. Okay. People always tell me, hey, you've got a good voice. You should do radio. It's like, okay, show me where the contract is. Yes.
I know, right? That'd be great.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm in.
We don't have contracts here at AON, but...
Yeah. Well, we're not also...
Thank you for letting us your voice.
Yeah, course, we're not radio either. Let's be clear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a kid, I once... So there's this, like, little tape recorder, this old-timey, you know, tape recorder. So you had it. Hit the record and play button now at the same time.
Yeah.
But just for fun, I read a book to my younger brothers and sisters, and I purposely like acted out all the characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And so I gave them like different voices, and I was just playing it back, and I was like, wow, I don't sound like that at all. I should do this for a living.
And this is how we got Mahmood the performer.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you haven't yet done that you want to do? Like, do you have that like pie in the sky? Like, I wanna do
Broadway.
Oh, whether it be a role or whether it be a style or whether it be TV or I don't know. Ooh, like, is there any? Ooh.
Oh my!
Any, like, do you have a goal right now? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Well, many goals. One of them is to play Othello.
One of them is.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yes.
I was about to say, one of them is to get paid $1 million, but...
Well, that too. That too. Okay.
But, Othello would be fantastic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and yeah. I don't know, just lately... Okay, so, remember during dress rehearsal...
Do you sing at all?
I've sang one time.
Okay, because there's the Othello opera, too, which would be...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, okay, there we go. That's another one, too. So I want to, like... I do want to, like, actually...
Get a musical theater...
I want to play in a band and be a singer in a band.
Okay. Nice.
But remember that in dress rehearsal?
Okay.
Tech rehearsal.
Oh, God, tech.
Where, yeah. I don't know, this is going to sound crazy, but I...
As opposed to the rest of our library.
Right. You're talking to a fight choreographer and a sword swallower, so yes. Up your game, right?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, pressure. So I didn't have the costume for Ramses.
Right.
So I went shirtless. But you know, part of me is like, wow, this actually, I'm okay with this. I mean, I feel very relaxed right now, you know. Yeah. This is to put it bluntly, I think I want to shed more clothes on stage.
Yes.
Okay, so people in the Twin Cities who are writing plays, we need a shirtless Othello stat.
Shirtless Othello.
Yeah.
Shirtless Othello. That's going to be next year's Fringe show.
The goal of every...
A one-man show.
Written by Eric Thompson.
Chris the French.
The goal of every actor, of course, is to be more relaxed on stage. And what better way to be relaxed? Just to like, hey, you know what? Psh, this is me. You know?
Yeah.
Just sitting in a robe with your underwear on. Yeah.
Yeah, if that even. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gonna maybe look into some burlesque or something like that.
We'll see.
Get your dance on.
Was it you who... We had this discussion before, right?
Possibly.
No. No. About burlesque stuff. Burlesque performance.
I've, 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 I've I did a burlesque number once.
Okay. Maybe it was someone else.
Salsa remembers that.
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut about my burlesque past.
It was probably somebody else because I only did the one for the Fearless Give to the Max Day a couple years back.
Mm.
So,
but I have been to a few burlesque shows and just find them very intriguing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, burlesque is almost always a form of commentary, and often it's comedy.
Mm.
I'm a huge fan of the burlesque that speaks to, because what burlesque is, it's like, my body is sexy, right? Like, you're like, you know, you're doing the tease and you're doing all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing it as a female Darth Vader, you're kind of taking something, turning it on its head,
mm-hmm.
and messing with that concept. What is it that somebody does feel is sexy about Darth Vader? What is ridiculous about this that I can pull a laugh from? Like, there are definitely elements to that. When I did the burlesque show for the Fearless, the burlesque dance, I came out in a bear costume, and I did a dance to Bear Necessities, right? So I had this bear theme. So, like, first the bear stripped, and then I stripped out of the bear costume. So it's nice. You know, playing on the levels, but I left the bear head on, and I feel like that's very important. But yeah, so it's you know, playing with a concept and finding the elements of humor or commentary that are inside of that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've never felt sexier with a bear head on. I'm just gonna say, like, there's nothing quite like going down to pasties in a ruffle butt undie thing with a bear head on. Like, I don't even, yeah.
Nice.
But there is a lot of just those. There's a lot of play that happens within the piece that I don't think a lot of people think about it necessarily when they think of burlesque. They're just thinking of chicks taking their clothes off. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So that's yeah.
Anyway.
There's things that things that I haven't done which I wouldn't. Yeah. You know, I'm curious to try.
Sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Should we take another break?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do a short one, and then we'll be right back with our outro.
What?
The outro.
What?
The outro.
What?
The outro.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Hey everybody, you should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast, or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for Apropos of Nothing.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Mahmood still.
Yay!
Good job.
Yes.
All right.
Glad you haven't become anyone else.
Yeah.
So this is our outro, which means we do a couple fun things, and one of them... We'll just get straight into it. Is something we call a Fast Five.
Fast Five.
Fast Five.
Ooh, yeah.
Really good.
I know he's real good at this stuff.
All right. So this is how this works. You, that's right. You, the dear listener, send to us five choices. We don't know what they mean. We just have to choose one. And it's only after we are done making all of those choices that we open up the second email and we find out what it all means. You'll pick on really quick. All right, today's Fast Five comes to us from James.
What the shit?
I know, right?
What?
I didn't send in a Fast Five when I didn't show up last week. What? I was busy. That's why I wasn't here.
I was in Europe.
I don't care.
Ooh. I sent one.
You were drinking in Europe. I was producing two fringe shows. Piss off.
What else would you do in Europe?
And having a Fearless Artistic meeting and doing... I was working.
I was on vacation, so that...
I know. Which means you had plenty of time to write fast.
Which means I shouldn't have been doing anything. But anyway, James says, to the dear fellow apropos-ters and our wonderful guest, whom it may concern. In light of the illness which has squozen the life from... Yeah, apparently that's what he said.
Wow, he's sick. All right.
In light of the illness which has squozen the life from me, I have crafted this fast five.
Oh, as opposed to...
In the hope that it may in some way replace my usual mindless bullshit rambling for this episode. Hey. Choice number one. Work or play? Play, clearly for me. Even when I'm working, I'm playing.
Even when I'm playing, I'm working, so I guess I have to go with work. Have you seen me? My playtime involves event coordination of a 50-hour comedy marathon.
I guess what's the difference?
I say play for sure.
All right.
Play. I mean, play while doing work.
Choice number two.
Yes.
African or European?
Could you be more specific?
I'm going to have to go. I think it's the African swallow.
I think it's the swallow thing.
Swallow?
Monty Python quote. Reference.
Oh.
I'm going with the African swallow.
Same. I don't know. Just because.
Sure. No reason.
Yeah.
African or European? I'm going to go European.
All right. Question number three. Audio or video?
Audio.
Video. I have a good imagination.
Like, video killed the radio star.
Like, I listen to podcasts a lot, but I don't listen to the radio at all.
At all.
I watch TV more, I think.
Hmm.
Aside from podcasts, I don't really do audio mediums very much.
I have to get dragged into TV shows. Like, that's... Yeah. Joe has expanded my TV horizons.
Right. Yeah.
And it's still, like, I just don't generally watch TV unless I'm watching with somebody else. Whereas radio... Oh my god! All the time, I have a routine set for my smart home stuff where I wake up to the radio.
Gotcha.
I don't watch a lot of TV either, but I do it more than the radio. Like I listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR.
A couple weeks ago,
they were like, this one song has been on the top 10 charts for like 10 weeks in a row. It broke a record, and I'm like, I've never heard that song.
I probably have.
I have not. I don't know that song at all.
I probably do.
I listened to it. I Googled it and listened to it. And I was like, I never.
Which song was it?
I don't even. It, old Town Road, Old City.
Okay.
If it's post 2011, I have no idea.
Yeah.
No, this was a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
But I was just like, I don't know what any of this is. Because I listen to podcasts or NPR.
NPR is radio.
If I'm listening, but if I'm listening to music, it's Irish music.
I mean, there is that.
So I'm going video.
Right.
I'd rather be deaf than blind, so I'll go video.
Good interpretation.
I would rather be blind than deaf.
I think I would rather be deaf.
What?
Huh?
With video, you've got the closed captions. So
he said.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Question number four.
Ding.
Push or pull?
I feel like in general, when I am directing, I tend to pull things out of my actors rather than shove them into things. Mahmoud can verify that if he would like.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
When pulling a heavy, or when there is a heavy load to be moved, I would rather pull the wagon than push it.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, because there's so many different scenarios which are specific, you know, like, gravitating.
You can pick whatever context you want.
Yeah, yeah, I'm gravitating towards, like human connection.
Right.
And I'd say... I tend to pull, not them to me, but me to them. Because I think I crave, you know, human interaction, and I...
Sure.
Well, I guess maybe I'm pushing myself toward
that. Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
No, okay.
Okay, what did Salsa's brain do?
Would you rather have the ability of gravitational pull or magnetic push?
Ooh.
And I think I've got to go with gravitational pull. That seems like a really cool superpower.
I like that too, yeah.
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 Oh.
Pulling people into your world. Pulling things.
I already pull people into my world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Still sticking with pull.
Okay.
Mm. Pull, pull, pull.
Question number 5.
Ding.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit or chicanery?
Excuse me. How do you spell chicanery?
C-H-I-C-A-N-E-R-Y. I gotta go with chicanery on this one. That is such a cool word.
It's a cool word. It also, like, feels more like playful.
Yeah.
Than bullshit.
Playful, intentional, witty. Yeah.
Right.
Whereas bullshit just seems like kind of negative.
Although I use the word bullshit way more often.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like chicanery should enter my vocabulary more often.
I don't know what chicanery means. So what that means is I would choose chicanery because I know what bullshit is, but this the thing that I don't know much about. I'm going to, like, you know.
So are you looking this up?
Yes. The
okay. The definition.
The yes. definition of chicanery is the use of trickery to achieve a political, financial, or legal purpose.
Ooh. Ooh.
Merriam-Webster says deception by artful subterfuge or sophistry.
Artful subterfuge, you said?
Yes.
Hmm.
So you have to be witty to pull this off.
I think I'll choose chicanery.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm going to go with bullshit.
All right.
Because I just like saying bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We wrap this up by saying I look forward to hearing your discussion about these items, James. All right.
Ah.
Did he say a James or just James?
I said James. A James.
Thank you, a James.
He wrote it with no a.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify. I don't want to mislead our listeners.
Yes. All right. No fake news.
Oh, God. Oh.
Sorry. Well, that's a whole topic we didn't even go into.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, yeah. Oh. Do we need to?
No. Mm-hmm. Plenty of others will do that for us.
Email numero dos. James says... Hospitable apropostors and excellent guest.
Most excellent guest.
Ooh. I won't include my answers, but am curious which you think I might choose. You're stealing that from me. Address this only as your time and interest permit. I have a feeling all podcast episodes without me tend to run otherwise pretty well on time and topic. Yeah.
Feeling or blatant telling?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The science is in. All right. Mm-hmm. Question number 1, work or play? I said play.
Mm-hmm.
You said work.
I said work.
Okay. If offered free food in a given situation, would you rather it be via a work event at which you'll give a speech or in lieu of payment for a stage performance? I gotta switch mine to work.
Yes.
I already get free food at work without having to give speeches.
Me.
I know, right?
I'm Janet.
My
so
life
cool.
is so hard. You guys, I got a pretty sweet gig. Not gonna lie. I'm getting back into my regular massages at work. By the way, just you know.
Oh, well,
all right. I had to take a couple weeks off because I was so busy, but now that things have slowed down at work again, I can get back in for my weekly hour-long massages.
I envy you.
Yeah, I envy me too. yeah, considering I already get free food at work, like we get free fruit in the morning, I'm going to have to switch to play.
In lieu of payment for stage performances?
Do you know how much I don't get paid for stage performances?
Fair.
Like,
very fair.
Yeah.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
If offered free food in a given situation, would you rather it be via a work event at which you'll give a speech, or in lieu of payment for a stage performance?
Okay, then I'll definitely do the work. Yeah.
Any excuse for me to get up and give a speech, honestly.
Yeah, I like giving speeches.
Cool, question number two. African or European? If you were to receive for a week's worth of lunches, would you rather get food from a Somali cuisine restaurant or one that serves food from Ireland and Scotland?
Oh, son of
Somali.
A bitch.
Somali. Somali.
Straight up Somali.
Oh. Yes.
Oh, no, that's a 50-50 split for Cedar, me, God damn it.
Cedar Riverside has got this great Somali restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name, but I've been there a few times.
The problem is that I love me some pasties.
Yep. And the injera and...
I guess I haven't really had Irish food, actually, now that I think about it.
All right, well, Merlin's. We're going at some point.
Merlin's?
Merlin's.
Okay.
I love Irish and Scottish food, clearly, but I'm sorry, Somali food wins hands down. Not only is it healthier, but my God, does it taste good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just going to remain split on that one. I like
allowed.
Food.
Not allowed.
I am allowed to remain split.
It is against the rules of Fast Five, Jen.
I have to choose.
You have to pick
during
one.
If it's
life or death.
First
you,
email.
No, yes. You have to
we
pick one.
We have never said.
Yes, we have. That is the, you
no,
have to pick
No, we have
one. Yep.
Never said during the second one if we have to pick. Only the first.
I think you're setting a dangerous precedent.
Yes, there's
I
no
think you're a dangerous precedent.
No, I'm pretty sure you have to pick one.
All right, fine. I'm going to stick with European then.
Well, there you go.
That was my original answer. Right. Take it.
You can mm-hmm. have mm-hmm. the truth in your heart, Jenna, but you have to pick one for the show.
Yes. And, you know, we can always change
I think
later.
This is
I mean, you know.
Bullshit. that's bullshit.
Is that chicanery?
This is not chicanery.
Holy chicanery.
There was nothing artful about this.
Question number three, audio or video? I said video.
Mm-hmm. Audio.
Do you prefer spooky stories to be delivered in a visual medium, a play, movie, TV, or an audio medium?
Audio medium. Podcast? Oh my God, audio medium.
I hate spooky stories. So I guess I'll go audio.
I want my imagination to be able to create whatever the fuck it's going to create.
Yeah, for spooky stories, I would for sure audio.
I
love a good visual spooky mm-hmm. story, don't get me wrong,
yeah.
But... Oh, man, when you're listening to, like, like Night Vale or, Alice something. What was it? It's a podcast. It's really good. Anyway, but, like, just listening to those things and your brain is filling in all of those details mm-hmm. in ways that visually you might not be able to get somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh my God! No, give me audio on that.
Let's make a quick sort of plug here. So, for those of you who don't know, at Southern Theater every Saturday at midnight there is a thing called Bald's Cabaret.
Yep.
And Bald's Cabaret is like the longest running cabaret show in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
But the last week of October, so the week of Halloween, the tradition that Leslie Ball, the host, has is instead of like actually having performers come in and perform. We all get together and we carve pumpkins and then we set up all the jack-o'-lanterns. We turn off the lights so that their glowing faces are all around us. And we take turns telling a spooky story.
Oh, my God.
And that is so amazing and so... Ooh,
oh,
yes.
God, that's good.
Yeah.
That whole campfire, you know, with the mm-hmm. flashlight under your face.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's the classic trope for that. Like, I think that's a given.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Question number four.
Ding.
Pull or push? Do you prefer comedy where you allow the audience to lead you, pull, or where you lead the audience, push?
Allow the audience to lead you.
This is a bullshit question because it should
kind
be
of.
Both.
I'm trying to think of the audience leading you. I don't know what the... I'm not connecting with that as much.
In Vilification Tennis,
mm-hmm.
A lot of what your next joke is going to be is what the audience responded to previous.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
So
gotcha,
that is definitely more audience-driven.
Okay.
One of the things that you will see if you pay attention at a vilification tennis show is the first round goes on stage, and as they deliver jokes, everybody else in cast is back there going, okay, they're not going for the nerd stuff tonight.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, they don't seem to be hitting on that, but they're going for the silly stuff. So kind of, and then the next people get on stage, they're going to hit them a lot more silly stuff because they're listening to what the audience says.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's more, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would still go with...
In fact, I would say that in Wilhelmina and Theodore, even though that was a scripted thing, there were times where you let the audience tell you what was going on and reacted appropriately, such as the shut up.
Mm. Yes.
You definitely let the audience tell you what was happening with them, and then you responded, so...
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going with push on this one. I really, yep. I like that well-crafted joke where you're just like, I'm taking them on a journey and I'm, you know, cutting that, you know, groove and just letting people flow into it behind you and just lead them down that path until the punchline. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that.
Yeah. I think for comedy, I am more of a pull.
Mm-hmm.
I work with the audience more. For my storytelling stuff, however,
mm-hmm.
I am going to push that sadness down your throat.
Right, yeah.
I'm just like, here, have more sadness. Like, nah, you're coming with me, bitches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I like in comedy is that you know, you're crafting the scenario and you're building the you're building the area that you're in with what you're saying and you're just kind of funneling people without them even realizing it towards a single focal point, and then when they all hit that point, that's when you hit the punchline. I love that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I learned a thing or two in this Wilhelmina performance about just like setting it, because I think this is like one of the funniest scripted shows I've ever been involved in.
Yay!
And just getting you know, like what Salsa was saying, of, you know, setting them up. And, you know, bringing them in, and then, like, boom, once they're in, boom, deliver that line.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, the some guy with the Stargate taught us English one time. You know, I learned how to get the right timing between the oh, man, that's power.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Bringing them in.
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad I could be a part of that.
Metaphorically take them by the nose and just pull them to the front of their edge of their seat when they're just like, something's about to happen and I don't know what it's. Oh, I love that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Orgasmic. Oh.
So I think I would go with leading them.
Push.
Right.
In that case, okay. Yeah, push, yeah.
All right. Question number 5.
Ding.
Bullshit. Ding. Or chicanery.
I already used bullshit like 3 times in this podcast, like outside of the bullshit thing.
Do you consider your personal brand of idle mingling at fest/parties to be closer to bullshitting with others or acts of chicanery?
Bullshitting.
At fest, it's acts of chicanery, I think, and bullshitting when I'm at parties.
Yeah, but you have an actual act, so, you know.
Exactly.
I really hope some thought went into your sword swallowing. But yeah, like street stuff, man. Even when I was emceeing for Sigourney's stuff, like that one was kind of a twofer because you know I had a lot of set stuff, but yeah, I would. There were moments with the audience where I was like, oh, we're just having a conversation now, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trick question because I don't mingle at parties.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't like people.
Yeah.
I would say I can pretend to like people.
Oh, so bullshit.
Yes, bullshit for sure. Yeah.
Oh, my.
All right. We wrap this up by James saying, with love and respect, James. If you would like to send in a Fast Five, send two emails to salsa@aonpodcast.com. So the first one should, of course, include nothing but the choices, and the second one should repeat the choices and then give us the context so we know what the fuck we're talking about. Do we have a shout-out?
I want to give a shout-out to both of my casts and crews for my French stuff, because, holy fuck, like, I produced, directed, curated, whatever, two very different shows this year, and they're both very well received.
Mm-hmm.
And that is near entirely to the people that I hired to do the thing, from the writing to the performing, stage management.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Watson Jones actually gets a little bit get more of a bump on this because I hired him to be my MC ringleader, and he ended up taking on a lot more of the production than originally intended, because I was distracted with Wilhelmina and Theodore. I'm gonna give extra shout out to Brian Watson Jones, but also to Jada, because they both kind of acted as my backup brains during each of the productions.
Yeah.
And goddamn, like, stage managers will always be my highest paid people, like, just straight up, because they do everything that I'm forgetting to do or that I don't want to do. So but yeah, both of my cast crew sets were just, oh my god, you poor thing.
You really got hit hard, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yes,
them hiccups. Goodness. Gotcha. But yeah, it was just really amazing to have two 4.5-star reviewed shows.
Yeah.
Very different, but very solid. And that's because of the people. Sweet. So thank you to the people.
Sweet.
You're welcome.
Including you.
You are welcome.
I'm going to give my shout out, and you think of one because you can do it on two as well. I'm going to give my shout out to Power Tools.
Oh, God, yes.
Because, as some of you probably are aware, the Renaissance Festival starts this coming weekend. The Minnesota one, I should clarify, starts this coming weekend. And this last weekend, we were out at the fest doing repair work, both at the stage and on our campsite. And, goddamn, power tools. Thank you.
Oh, power tools.
Thank you so much. We bought a new reciprocating saw.
Yay!
Yeah, reciprocating saw and, you know, drill bits and or power drills and circular saws and all that stuff like that. Oh, it makes life so much easier. Thank you, Power Tools. Do you have one?
I do. I want to give a shout out to these goddamn hiccups for, like, never dying.
That's good one. Job, hiccups.
Yes. But also, seriously though, I want to give a shout out to Don Krasnowski and Doug Washington, and Tim Wick, and others and I don't want to give too many details because this could be a legal issue, but something happened during a friend's performance, which, you know, unfortunately, it was a pretty negative experience for an audience member, and the three folks and other people and the audience as well stood up for that audience member and let the performer know that this was not okay, and steps were taken to, you know, bring this up to the Fringe directors. And so I'm just really, you know, grateful for the for helping out someone who needed help and who was defenseless in the moment.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Do we have anything to plug?
Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
What? Where can they find you, Jenna?
Bitch me on the streets, yo. I am not with Sigany this year.
They're not even Sigany anymore.
They're not even Sigany anymore.
Better talk.
Better talk. Which I think is a name change that's been a long time in coming.
I like it. I was very
It means friends in Hungarian, and that's delightful to me. But yeah, between my duties as the assistant campground director, plus doing the two fringe shows, plus my duties as the assistant artistic director with Fearless, plus I was still doing vilification at the time.
Damn.
Plus, like, and I had so much going on. I was like,
Shit, be busy, yo.
I do not have the time to dedicate before Fest to rehearsals. And during Fest, I don't really have that much time. Like last year, I was just running around like crazy.
Sure.
It was so hard to get to shows and then do the campground director stuff at the same time. Yep. So, yeah, I'm bringing back Nettie. Nettie the fishmonger. I know. I've already played with her a little bit. She's gotten crabbier.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Not surprised at all, but right? Also fishmonger, yeah. Crabby.
Oh, God damn it.
Bravo.
Oh, son.
Bravo.
But yeah, so you can look for Nettie trying to catch fish out of Folkestone Well, the little fountain guy, or fishing off the bridge, or chasing down the Royal Navy for their boat. Or trying to break into Mermaid Cove.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, the rule of the game there is that I never actually get into Mermaid Cove.
No.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
I love it.
So it'll be good entertainment for the kids in the line.
Love it.
Get smacked down by Allie repeatedly. It'll be great. So yeah. Also, lots of rope stuff this year.
Rope.
No. But like one of the big things about fishermen was that sailors did macrame. Sailors did net making. Sailors did a lot of knots and rope things and whatever. So Nettie is going to I'm going to do some more rope things. I've got a giant 50-foot length of rope that I might just have patrons do jump rope with me at.
Oh.
I might try to learn some macrame or work with some kids on some stuff. I've got, rope stuff.
Does Nettie have, like, a kettle or something like
kettle?
That? Yeah, because you need a Nettie pot.
Puns are not my thing. If you would like some puns, may I refer you to the Squires, Kyle Decker and James Fairbairn.
Definitely bullshit.
Bullshit. But maybe I'll get her a little pot. I make no promises.
Thank you.
We'll see. Or if somebody wants to gift me a little tiny 2-inch pot, something from a dollhouse perhaps. But yeah,
you're gonna get so many.
Just gonna have a string of neti pots. Anyway, but yeah, so that's what I'll be doing this year.
Cool. Okay. Casimir will be at the Sherwood stage at 11 a.m., at 1:30 p.m., and at 4:00 p.m. That's at the Sherwood stage. And you will also find Casimir at the Off the Vine wine tasting, at the Pig and Swig, and at the 2:00 Feast of Fantasy.
Woo!
So he'll be getting around.
Yeah.
Cool. Do a lot of swallowing.
And little to no eating.
Yeah. Mahmoud, what you got?
Well, first of all, I want to also... This is probably a given, but my shout out also includes Jenna and Jada and Kara and Jason for the wonderful job they did in both the fringe shows that I was in. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Now I'm
also
gonna...
for talking to her about joining Fearless and that.
Oh yeah, that too.
God. So anyway.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be in Double Blind this Thursday. So
yeah. Oh, I'm working box office for that.
Okay. So okay. Awesome. I don't know who else is in yet. I'm sure
there was a picture was posted today.
Okay.
Let me look.
Yeah, ooh, okay. I'll look it up. Because there was a lot of good performers.
Ooh.
But anyway,
yeah, double blind. I'm going to be in the horror festival.
Yeah.
So Duck is working on a show.
Okay.
Putting it together at the moment. He's got the cast already lined up.
Nice.
Here we go. is Thursday, August 15th, and all proceeds go to Huge Theaters campaign to buy a new theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So we'll have Eric Thompson and keyboardist some jerk named Joseph.
Yeah, he's pretty.
Yeah. joined by Lauren Haven, Kyle Decker, Sarah Baker, Mahmoud Hakima. Hakima.
Hakima.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where was I? Andy Rapella and John Gibbertost.
Awesome.
John G. Come and see the makeup things for your amusement.
Awesome.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Oh, yeah. And if you can, please donate to Huge.
Yeah.
They're trying to get a new space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't want their landlord to be a guy who supports David Duke.
Okay, no.
So, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, please donate to Huge.
Yes.
Anything else coming up?
That's all I got for now.
Okay.
For now.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool. Well, in that case, unless anybody has anything else to...
Oh, wait. No, you do have one more thing. But people can't come to it unless they're already coming to it. Next Thursday. Murder on the Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Thank you for reminding me. Oh, my God. The 22nd, I would have been at home. It's like,
Just like, I feel like I should be doing something today.
Yeah, Murder on the Mississippi. There's two more performances. One on the 22nd next week, and then the September. But they're both sold out. So
yeah.
But sometimes people do
next
drop
year.
Out,
you so. Guys seriously get your tickets early.
Yeah.
They specifically added a fourth one right off the bat this year, and they're all sold out. So what are you waiting for?
Yes.
All right. In that case, if there's nothing.
Jenna, do I have anything else, Jenna?
I don't know of anything else that you're doing.
All right.
Do I have anything else, Jenna?
No, you shouldn't. Surprised that Mahmoud doesn't have more things. You, meh. I'm going to make one more plug.
Oh, there you go.
This Friday at the Bryant Lake Bowl, Vilification Tennis will be performing.
Which none of us are.
Yeah. I'm all retired.
Yeah.
But my DNA will still be on stage.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good. Maybe.
My daughter.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Awesome.
my daughter will be in this show, which is Get Off My Lawn. Vilification Tennis tackles retirement.
Okay.
My daughter being the youngest person on cast.
Yeah.
But possibly has the soul of a 70-year-old curmudgeon. Yeah. So I feel like she is still appropriately cast for this show.
Perfect.
Go check her out if you're not going to be in my campground line on Friday.
I feel like my comedic legacy will be on that stage, but no DNA. And I'm okay with that.
you have a legacy?
I mean, yeah.
Don't we all? Of some kind.
Okay, that's fair. I will accept that one, Mahmoud. Your legacy. That's good marketing is what that is. All right, what?
And that's it. All right. So, thank you so very, very much to everybody who listened to this episode. Thank you to James for sending in a fast five. Thank you to our special guest.
Yay. Get well soon, James.
Yes, indeed. Please get well soon. I guess.
If you want to.
I would prefer it.
Anyway, on behalf of myself and the absent James and Jenna, thank you so very much for listening, and eat the fucking cake. Love you, bye-bye.
Oh, God damn it. Take it away, Salsa.
Cha. Verbal Jazz Fingers.
Verbal Jazz Fingers is the name of my new Led Zeppelin cover band.